So there you have some of the timeline of the developments leading up to this deal. Unfortunately, I apologize. I thought we were going to review the JCPOA, which we have a special package for you on that. And that's very important to see how the world powers, along with the United States, actually reached that agreement in the first place. Well, we have some guests in the studio to break all of this down for us. We have Masoud Shajere, who's a political commentator, joining us, and also Said Mostafa Hoshesh, a journalist and political commentator. Also, I'd like to welcome you both. First question, obviously, should be your reaction as to the developments and the U.S. pulling out of the deal.
Well, I really think that the whole of the international community was really making a big thing of this. I mean, United States and Trump in particular weren't really implementing the deal in many ways. So pulling out of it really is not going to make that much difference. I mean, the reality is that the only ones partially implemented were Europeans and Chinese and Russians. And in many ways, you know, this gave the opportunity to Trump to bully and continue bully not just Iran, but bully the rest that I'm going to pull out, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and create instability or trying to create instability in Iran. And I think, you know, the reality is that it really doesn't make much difference, you know, and really there's not going to be, the sun is going to rise tomorrow and it will set down again. And the reality is that Iran will continue. And we will see that, if anything, international community would realize, those within the international community, those even within Iran, we actually were counting on this. Now they're going to realize that you cannot do a deal with the devil, and the devil is always going to let you down. And this really proves the fact, and it proves also the fact that, you know, from very long time, many Iranians know this, and indeed many in the international community and intelligence agencies, including CIA, know this, that Iran wasn't really chasing to have a nuclear weapon. If anything, Khamenei has re-emphasized over and over, we have no intention of having nuclear weapon. And if anything, this deal was really just proving the fact that Iran had no intention. So really, we haven't lost anything. Iranians haven't lost anything except gaining the reality that the concept that United States cannot be trusted internationally, one. Secondly, this whole pressure that was put on Iran, which led to this deal, was not really about nuclear, and it was for something else. It was actually to get Iran to become subservient, like the rest of the countries in the region, to United States and indeed to Israel. And Iran is not willing to do that. So we are going to have this difficulty, this issue continuing. And if anything, Iran has been extremely successful. Look at what happened sort of only yesterday in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is that the whole region is waking up to the sort of the abuses of United States, abuses of Israel, and the fact that the Saudis have joined this unholy group, it really has not fooled anybody, and people actually are awakening to the reality that the United States has brought no peace, no tranquility, not just to the region in Middle East, but indeed to the whole world. Where has the United States brought peace and tranquility?
That's true. I'd like to ask you, Mostafa Hoshesh, about the statements that Donald Trump made. Now, we know that he's somewhat detached from some of the realities. The Hezbollah win in Lebanon, showing the will of the people there and the popular support that it has, perhaps is one good example. But let me just ask you your reaction to some of these statements, like how Iran is a leading state sponsor of state terror, fuels conflicts in the Middle East, is a supporter of the terrorist groups Hezbollah, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, bombing American embassies, imprisoning, torturing American citizens, the leading funder of terror and chaos, and I could keep going on and on. I haven't heard a U.S. official talk about Iran in this extremity, filled with fabrications. Who is his audience when he's talking like this?
Well, you know, let me tell you that if nothing else, this deal has gifted Iranian a small part of the Iranian community, as well as some politicians, who believe that the U.S. might be willing to resolve differences with Iran some few years ago, and they believe that this is Iran driving the waves of hostilities and not the U.S. This has educated the Iranian community as well as the outside world. Now everybody can see for himself that this is the United States that's willing to continue hostilities and tensions in the region. Now, if anything is, if nothing else, something is very good about this Mr. President Donald Trump, because he's showing the true nature of the United States naked. So when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama tried to implement their policies, but they packed their policies, you know, in they wrapped them up in some beautiful papers and presented these policies to the world in good shape. Donald Trump is truly showing the nature of the United States' hawkish, hostile, and bullying policies. How? You know, Trump is driven, especially with regard to the Iran nuclear case, he's driven by a number of factors. First is the domestic politics. Like, he doesn't like whatever Obama's done, so he's going the opposite way. Two, there are some neocons and ultra-right parties that are very much driving his policies. Israel and Saudi Arabia are very much, you know, since day one that this deal was struck, they were angry, they were furious about this deal, and they tried a lot to, you know, dismantle this deal. And when he was elected a few months later, Netanyahu, the Israeli premier, visited the White House. He was there with a package of proposals that included four different sets of proposals for abrogating the deal, and he convinced Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a manifestation of all the mad policies that are pursued by the world. So it's no strange that he speaks of Iran like this. When Iran has been under the most number of man-hour of IAEA inspections, and they found nothing in 10 reports. They have endorsed Iran's full compliance with the JCPOA, and two NIE, National Intelligence Estimate reports under George Bush and Barack Obama, both endorsed that Iran has never been after developing nuclear bombs after 2003 at least. And the PMD case that's been a core document of this JCPOA and was endorsed by Iran and the IAEA and the world powers said that Iran has never done anything in pursuit of nuclear, you know, developing a military nuclear capability, and never conducted any kind of studies after 2003. They alleged something before that, but they could never, you know, prove it. But anyway, they have reiterated, I mean, the IAEA, the NIE, that's a report given out by 16 U.S. intelligence bodies under two presidents. Everyone has been saying that Iran has done nothing wrong. And this is a very important point. Now, Netanyahu comes out with some tens of thousands of documents that he alleges to be presenting something, and the whole world didn't care about what he presented. You know, the Russians, the Europeans, they all, you know, made a mockery of him and said that if he has something, anything, he needs to present it to the IAEA. He didn't present anything, but he made or renewed claims that Iran is developing a new military nuclear capability. The same allegations were repeated by Mr. Trump, ignoring all the reports that his own countries, you know, CIA, FBI, the NSA, and others have given on two different occasions in 2007 and 2010, as well as the IAEA, that is supposed to be the vetting body here. The authority rests with the IAEA, and the IAEA says that Iran's military, Iran has never had any kind of military nuclear activities. So he's showing full disrespect for international bodies, for everyone else, for the Europeans and others, and he's just making allegations that are not true, we all know. About the regional activities, I know the next time I'll return to that, because he made a number of points about Iran's nuclear activities and drive, about Iran's original pattern and activities that it's conducting, about Iran's missile industry. He also touched on that. But one thing is very important here. The future of this deal now depends on the Europeans. The Europeans, I believe, have been provided with a unique opportunity to prove if they are subordinate to the US or if their claims about being an independent bloc and power is true. Now, if they guarantee Iran's continued merits under this deal without requesting anything more, then there might be a future for this deal. Otherwise, I believe that Iran will tear it apart if they just suffice to some political stances without any kind of action in opposition to what the U.S. is doing through bullying.
Well, that's the thing. Now, we heard from the EU foreign policy chief, Mesut Cezare, and we got to give it to her, this Federica Mogherini, the etiquette and the professionalism in the way that she delivered her sentiments, which was very short and sweet and to the point. And let me just make one statement of what she has said. The European Union is determined to preserve it. Together with the rest of the international community, we will preserve this nuclear deal. I am particularly worried by the announcement tonight of new sanctions. I think we're looking at a rift now between the EU, obviously, and the U.S. As Mr. Khoshresh says here, to what extent will the EU go out to preserve this deal with Iran, given the fact that Trump has said that there are going to be sanctions against any entities that do business with Iran? There's got to be that aspect of it that I'd like to ask your reaction from, and also the fact that whether Iran wants to preserve this deal at all, given the fact that the U.S. has pulled out, because that is still up in the air, even though the Iranian president has said we're going to review with the other signatories as to what we're going to do.
Yes, I think it is a great opportunity for the European. And if Europeans are not going to separate their policies from United States at the time presidency of Trump, then they're never going to do it any other time. I mean, really, most people around the world are embarrassed to be associated with Trump, let alone being dictated by Trump what to do and what to do. And I think Europeans need to, for their own sort of sanctity and for our own sanity, they need to separate themselves. And I think, you know, this deal, it only makes sense that if there is a misunderstanding that Iran could have been involved in some sort of development of nuclear weapon, and this ensures that it's not going to do so. My colleague said, there were over and over and over intelligence services, joint intelligence services in the United States, in Britain, in Germany, in France, sort of identified Iran wasn't following any procedure to actually get to develop nuclear weapons. This deal ensured that Iran is not going to do so. For United States to go against this deal, it basically means that they have got very clearly hidden agenda, and their hidden agenda is that they want to turn Middle East into a war zone, not just in Syria, not just in sort of Iraq and Libya, but they want to expand that. So their colleagues in sort of Israelis and Saudis will benefit from that destruction. And I think this is the reality now. United States is oppressing the region, and Iran is actually remedying that. Iran stopped Daesh. You know, United States was supporting Daesh. Israel clearly was supporting Daesh. Saudi Arabia was clearly supporting Daesh. Daesh, a disease that many thought that is going to stay in Middle East for many, many years, was remedied through Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia, and mainly Iran's effort and management of Iran's sort of management against the terrorism. Now, this is something that the international community is awakened to. Local communities are awakened to. I'll go back to the issue of Lebanon. The result of Lebanon is the testimony that people in Lebanon realize what's happening in the region. And they're actually supporting Hezbollah and indeed supporting Iranian efforts in Syria and elsewhere because it brought peace and tranquility. What is important to all of us, be it in Iran or in Libya or in Lebanon or Iraq, is security, because without security, nothing else matters. And on the issue of economy, we could have a local economical sort of policy which would benefit us, because now we no longer have to sort of wait for United States to actually throw some crumbs towards us. Mm-hmm. We could stand up, and our communities right across the world is actually awakened to this. I actually think in reality we should celebrate today. We should celebrate because we got rid of this sort of bullying tactics which has been hanging over our head, and in some ways Trump, with mask removed, is actually removed this extenuation of this bullying policy, which could have been dragged off. I mean, what he could have done tonight is put a couple of sanctions and drag us for another 6 months, and then another 6 months, two more. And actually, I think he actually freed us. We should be thankful.
Well, that puts into question this whole nuclear deal in the eyes of the U.S. In particular, I'm guessing the top three who are pivotal in the U.S. foreign policy: Donald Trump, Michael Pompeo, and John Bolton now as part of his team. He doesn't listen to his top general not to pull out of the deal. So obviously he's going to have these two subordinates and his ideas, which I guess they're all compatible. It doesn't sound as if Iran were Iran, which it never will, listen to the U.S. in any shape or form, that would actually quench U.S.'s thirst for what it wants from Iran. Because we know what these two men, Michael Pompeo and John Bolton, have in mind when it comes to Iran. Do you think that is part of the wider agenda of the U.S. President Donald Trump? That's what he's after. And these lies that he gave, falsifications that he gave, is trying to brainwash the whatever audience he has into thinking that Iran is so bad that this is just more the beginning of the way that U.S. is going to counter Iran, that this nuclear deal is, to him, just a plaything.
Well, sure. You know, this is a part of the broader strategy of the U.S., the deepest state in the U.S., and the U.S. ruling system. This is wrong to believe that this is Donald Trump, only Donald Trump, that's doing this. And if it were a Hillary Clinton administration, there would have been, a different strategy. No, this is not the first time that the U.S. is betraying its deals with or agreements with Iran. In 2001, under the reformist president Mohammad Khatami, there were some trivial agreements.
Okay, I'm sorry, I got to jump in here. We have a U.N. official, I believe, who's talking live right now. Let's take a listen. I'm assuming maybe it's the U.N. Secretary General. Let's take a listen to what he's saying, if not a representative from the U.N.
Abide fully by their respective commitments under the JCPOA and all other member states to support this agreement. Thank you. Under the JCPOA and all other member states to support this agreement. Thank you.
Okay, we unfortunately caught the end of that. In terms of what you just saw, that was the UN chief spokesperson who was speaking, reacting to the U.S. withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. I'm curious as to what transpired in his statements, but I'm looking at many reactions that are coming through, and almost all, if not all, are against what the U.S. president has done, along with, of course, some other reactions as to the way that these sanctions are going to snap back, which we will get into. That's more on the technical side. Does the U.S. president realize the ramifications of what he has done when it comes to people trusting the U.S.? He has reneged on this now, adding to the list of the climate change deal, as the Iranian president has said, and, of course, the trade deals. What do you think? The credibility of the U.S. definitely now under question.
I think the credibility of the U.S. was under question the minute he became elected. I think really the whole world was shocked. But I think when you look at him, you know, this buffoon, what he does very well is that he sort of addresses his very small sort of constituency, but effective constituency. This is sort of people of sort of extreme right. This is people who have been actually evangelical Christian community who supported him and so forth. And the sort of way he talks, it actually gets a listening ear from that community. But what it does is alienates everybody else in the United States, and indeed more so anywhere else in the world. But also what he does, he's actually preparing to milk the Saudi cow, you know, even further and further. And some of the rhetorics that he's coming out with is to address that constituency, and the rest of it is addressing the constituency of the Zionists and the Zionist lobby in the United States. He's calculating that by going down this road, he will alienate many people, but he will actually keep a very strong and committed sort of group of people behind him, which will ensure that he will stay in power. But there is another factor I think we need to take into account, and that is that, you know, when an empire is towards its end, it becomes more aggressive, it becomes, you know, it tries to find a way, fighting his way out, it becomes more dictatorial, it becomes, you know, more mad, and, you know, and I think United States, by, you know, is showing us is going through that process. And the fact that he was elected, again, is testimony to that process. And he's going to actually, yes, indeed, he's going to destroy any possible name that is, good name that is left for United States. But I think that's going to happen to empires that are losing their position. And this is that process we're going through. But also, it's very dangerous when empires going through that process.
Well, we have to now look at, if I may ask you, the reaction that's going to come from Iran. I mean, we can mention some of the statements that have come through in the past month or so. Looking at one of the more recent statements that perhaps you can tell us who said it, and that's Iran reconsidering being a member of the NPT, for example.
Mr. Shamkhani.
Shamkhani. Yeah. Okay, and also we had Dr. Ali Akbar Salehi talking about the resumption of enrichment and things of that nature. Tell us your thoughts on that. And I would think that when Iran is making those types of statements based on the you know, threats of U.S. withdrawal, that the one person or entity that should really pay attention to that would be Israel. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like that display showed that Israel actually gives it that much importance for some reason.
Well, because Netanyahu needs a boogeyman abroad, because Netanyahu and Trump, they need each other very much. Because of the embezzlement case that Netanyahu has, and, you know, there have been many demonstrations in Israel against him and with regard to his case, embezzlement case, he needs a batman abroad in order to, you know, derail attention of the public opinion. And also, Donald Trump needs Netanyahu's support for his policies and the support of the IPAC and other Zionist lobbies in there. As I was explaining in the last question,
I'm sorry, Iran, I forgot about that. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay, because it's related to this question.
Great.
So in 2001, when under President Khatami and George W. Bush, the son, there was some agreement over the Afghanistan case, Iran stood up to its, you know, it held up its end of the bargain. But what did the U.S. do? They called Iran an axis of evil after Iran complied with the terms of the agreement. In 2004, Iran signed triple agreements with the three European states, Germany, the UK, and France. It halted its nuclear activities. It didn't have any more than four centrifuges. So there was no enrichment program underway, at least in action. And it started the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol to the NPT. But after months, because there were three agreements, one agreement was underway for 2 years, and the additional implementation of the additional protocol, the voluntary implementation of that agreement, was underway for 9 months. What did they do? At the end of it, They didn't do anything first. Second, Iran asked them why it's not receiving anything in return. The trio came to Iran to tell Iranian officials that we cannot do anything because the U.S. is blocking our actions, and it's not satisfied, you know, with this deal, and we cannot give you anything in return. What happened? First, I hope that this time we are not facing the same situation, that the trio would prove that they are independent nations and not so much subordinate. Of course, I don't pin much hope on that, because when Donald Trump declared the war of tariff on the European continent, they stated that they would not act in reprisals and they would not take any retaliatory measure. But anyway, if they want to prove that they are independent powers, they need to take action and be different from the last time that they did this over 13 years ago. What was the result? Iran started a vast and huge enrichment program. From four centrifuges, it increased to somewhere around 20,000, 19,000 centrifuges. 11,000 of them were operating. And Iran developed its enrichment program into industrial scale. So what did the sanctions do? Nothing. What did the pressures do? Nothing. Mr. Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, has been trying to, you know, tell Donald Trump and anywise person that might be still in the U.S. that this would be the result. He repeated this statement just today that if the U.S. abrogates the deal, the result would be the same. Iran, as Mr. Salehi, the Iranian nuclear chief, has stated, Iran would develop its nuclear program again, and it would go for 200,000 SWU, separate working units of centrifuges and enrichment of output. So the result would not be any good for the United States if they believe that they can contain Iran's nuclear power in this way. At least under the JCPOA, they could see parts of Iran's enrichment plan, you know, curbed for 10 years. But now there is no reason for Iran to stay under such a deal. With regard to other areas that they have problem with, and they allege to have concerns about Iran's regional activities, about Iran's missile development program. Okay, now even Boris and Macron, the French president, tried in recent days to say it in the public and very openly and very simply, in simple words, that to Mr. Donald Trump, that if you want to work out some kind of agreement with Iran, then you have to keep this and build on this. Otherwise, Iran's power could never be harnessed. And I would like, and this is not my personal view, of course, that's what Macron said and Boris Johnson said. I believe that Iran would never, ever compromise its missile power and its regional power under no circumstances. But anyway, Trump and Israel both, they need, especially this is a kind of, among the game rules of Donald Trump, that they need a Batman in the world, in different world regions, like North Korea in there, and Iran in here, in order, as Mr. Shajara stated earlier, to milk their allies, Japan, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, and others. They have already started doing so in Syria. They have declared that they would cut off funding to the White Helmets, but this is Qatar, and this is Saudi Arabia and Turkey that need to pick up the funding and continue funding the terrorist group in there.
You talk about the White Helmets. You know, many people, I personally was very embarrassed for myself that I wasn't aware that the U.S. State Department actually funds the White Helmets that has terrorist entities within it. So that's, but that's a whole nother issue. You know, I have to reflect on some of the reactions that are coming, and we need to pick up on what the UN has said. And since we went in and the statement he said, but the UN chief has called, and that's based on the spokesperson, the UN chief has called on the other signatories to stand by the Iran nuclear deal. So you have the UN, you have the EU, Russia and China, based on everything that they've said up to this point, and I'm sure that they still support this deal. Obviously, this looks like the U.S. is isolated on this deal. So if you have the major world powers against the U.S., either the U.S. wants it that way, and then to deal with each country, the countries in the EU, bilaterally, or that these countries actually have a plan to perhaps isolate the U.S. Because you have a new kid on the block anymore who's a bully, and that's exactly what Trump is doing with China and the possible trade war, EU and a possible trade war. I don't think he's picked a thing with a tiffy with a lot of countries. Are we seeing that happen actually now?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Europeans and the Chinese and the Russians are not naive, and they have been planning things, how to deal with this. And this is, he just done it, but he's been talking about it for a very long time, and he talked about it even before he was elected. So one of the things that I've seen happening in Europe is that they are setting up banks that could do international dealing with Iran, but have no dealing with the United States, so they cannot be sanctioned by United States. You know, United States could actually take and sort of punish a bank which is doing business in United States. If it's not doing any business in United States, they cannot do anything whatsoever. So they're actually setting up structures like that, so they could actually have dealings done. Russia itself is sort of target of sanctions. So they are setting up procedures how to bypass sanctions and so forth. And I actually think that, you know, some of politicians from Iran talking about we're going to go back and we're going to restart our nuclear program. I think we are in a different ball game, and we need to revalue. There's really no point of going back to the same policies as before, because those policies are going to end up going to the same direction that it has gone till now. And I think what we need to sort of look is what Iran genuinely needs for keeping it independent, actually making sure that it could defend its interests and its borders and be a power for good in the region. And I think, when you look at that, it might be that really we don't need to have, a nuclear industrial sort of base system anymore. But, the rocket developments and, other areas, having a better relationship with others, isolating United States, checkmating United States and Trump, it might be actually more beneficial to us. Checkmating, Saudi Arabia, the sort of Israelis. I mean, really, let's face it, we are doing that.
Well, the whole thing is, who does the U.S. have on board? I mean, the national security statement that came out from the U.S. Roughly a couple of months, maybe, max, named China and Russia as the biggest security threats to the U.S. Iran was on that list also. How could China and Russia then, now that the U.S. has done this, going to really be sincere in dealings with the U.S.? I mean, still, up to this point, I don't quite understand how Trump thinks they're going to have Russia on board, they're going to have China on board on this.
Well, this is impossible. I mean, they can never have Russia and China on board because the United States, as you just mentioned, has started a war of tariffs and a war of trade on China, because they know that China will soon overpass the United States economy and become the global power, in at least in the area of economy, soon. So they are trying to do whatever they can in line with the isolationist line of economy that Donald Trump has developed. And his America First strategy is based on the same fact. He is trying to go head on head to China, Russia. What matters now here is that Iran, China, Russia, and a number of other nations need to launch joint cooperation in order to develop mechanisms for, banking, for the SWIFT system. You know, SWIFT is like a messaging app and could be replaced. There are many other rivals that there are in the, working in the banking area, in the banking field. And the Chinese, and especially the Russians, are using those systems. Iran could also pick up that instead of SWIFT system that never started working eventually under the nuclear deal, unfortunately, as it was one of the points of this JCPOA. And also China has started its own banking, its own bank that's believed to be the rival of the United States and the World Bank in the next decade. So they need to develop cooperation under such organizations as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as under BRICS, the Seven Nations. And Iran could do a lot because it is a very rich nation. It has the largest combined oil and gas reserves of the world. It has many kinds, you know, types of mines. But the United States is aware of that. They know that. They have started the front along with Israel and along with Saudi Arabia. They've lost the game in the Middle East, in West Asia. And they don't know any way to regain their role. They've been sidelined very easily when Iran and Russia started cooperation in Syria. And they could bring back power to the Syrian government. And they are mad because they don't know how to act. Now, what I see in this is that Iran's situation is completely different from what it was in 2014 in the region and with regard to its missile program and missile capability. What I see is a unique chance for the Europeans to do a number of things. You know, the scenario from now on would be a couple of scenarios are possible for the future of this deal. If Iran is not going to discard the deal right away, I think both scenarios include working with the EU. But if the EU suffices to such political stances that Mrs. Mogherini just declared, that we are in support of the deal, we would do anything. Okay, that's a political stance, but that's not enough. Iran should receive the merits, the very meager economic merits that it was receiving from the EU under the deal. So Europeans need to first take action in order to protect their economic interaction with Tehran and to protect their businesses that are already having interactions with Tehran. That's the first thing they need to do. The second point, they should drop their calls for more concessions in other areas, like in Iran's missile program and concessions that they desire in area of Iran's regional activities. Number three, which is the most important one, is that, okay, we had a deal. There were several states contributing to this deal. The major part was due to be done by the United States, not because of the economic merits, but because of withholding the sanctions and the secondary impact of the United States nuclear-related sanctions that were imposed on Iran, but also deprived other nations of working and enjoying the merits of economic activity with Iran. So now that the U.S. is officially out, Iran's undertakings should be modified. And this modification or these modifications need to be meaningful, not something symbolic, with regard to Iran's deterrence, with regard to the number of Iran's centrifuges, with regard to Iran's missile program, with regard to Iran's enrichment ceiling and heavy water stockpile ceilings. There are a lot of undertakings that Iran has undertaken, you know. These undertakings should be modified for sure if this deal is going to live. What Mr. Rouhani stated just tonight, he very delicately but very eloquently stated that if this deal is going to live, then Europeans need to protect Iran's interests. If Iran's interests are met in full, and he never said a part of Iran's interests. He said if Iran's economic interests are protected in full, then there might be a future, some hopes for the future of this deal. So these three need to be respected by the Europeans. As far as I know, the Europeans are thinking of a second scenario that's no way going to be agreed by Iran and the Iranian people. They are apparently, they plan to protect their companies, but they are not thinking of modifications of Iran's undertakings. And more importantly, they are thinking of more concessions, not the type of concessions that the United States and Donald Trump expected from Iran, fewer concessions, but still concessions. Iran has complied with its undertakings in full. Iran shouldn't be mm-hmm. the party that's providing more. This is Europe that needs to prove that it is honoring its words and the endorsement and its signature down the deal. Otherwise, there is no difference between Europe and the United States.
Sounds like Mr. Khoshesh has some insider information about what the Europeans want. Well, this brings us to an end for me at this point. And I'd like to thank you for your comments, but I'd like you to stay with us. I'm going to pass it on now to Gisu Misho Ahmadi to continue this rolling coverage. A long night in Iran ahead for deep analysis on this, and of course all the reactions that are coming through on this. At this point, I'm going to pass it on to Gisu Misho Ahmadi.